Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Logan Paulson does pre and post right here on 106.7 The Fan with J.P. Flame and Pete Medhurst, respectively, every Sunday. If you haven't given those guys a listen, you're going to want to. They do a great job. Welcome back. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Washington loses 34-20 at the hands of the Cleveland Browns. By the way, Cleveland in this game didn't really do anything down the field in the passing game at all. In fact, Baker Mayfield had as easy a day as he's going to have. 156 yards and two touchdowns in a win to get a 117.3 quarterback rating. They were able to run the football in the second half. 35 carries for over 140 combined yards for Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. And the story, Danny, was the short fields, taking over three times inside the 30-yard line to go touchdowns after Haskins' interceptions. Let's talk to Logan Paulson, who is on the Mattress Warehouse hotline right now. Logan, you watched the game yesterday. I guess let's start with Haskins. He's getting crushed pretty hard today. Was it as bad as everybody's saying, do you think?
You know, I'm going to preface this by saying that playing quarterback is a really tough position. But that being said, it's also the arguably the most important position in sports. And when that guy doesn't play well, it makes it hard for football teams to be successful. And everyone's entitled to an off day. And I think his off day was pretty off. But, you know, nobody's perfect. And I would say that one of the reasons it's so frustrating, his level of play, was that I thought the rest of the team played pretty well. The defense played pretty good. The rest of the skill guys played pretty good. I thought Scott Turner called a nice game. The offense looked a little bit more upbeat. It looked a little bit more dynamic. And all of those things are really positive. And I really felt like the defense came out and kind of put their foot down on those first couple drives and said, you're not going to be able to run the football against us. But unfortunately, those turnovers, they led to kind of some attrition along that defensive front. And, you know, I think so long answer short, yeah, I think some of that criticism is warranted of him today because I thought the team played well enough to win the game, if that makes sense.
Sure. Logan, when you're in a game like that, I wonder, you know, how many of those you get before guys start going, man, we're good enough. You're getting held back. In other words, Danny and I talk a lot about the fact that the supporting cast around him is not good. The receivers, you know, the offensive line, the offense itself is not going to be good. But on days like yesterday where you feel like guys are open and they are running the ball and there are plays to be made and they're playing from out front, it becomes a bigger problem if your quarterback is struggling. Is that something that's obvious on the sideline where you're going, man, we're good enough, this guy's just not giving us a chance? Or do you not think of it that way because you're team first?
Yeah, so I think you'd like to think team first, but there are times, you know, I'm an offensive player. There are times where I've been on offense, and I think to myself, you know, middle of the third quarter, middle of the second quarter, whatever it may be, where it's like, man, as an offense, we are letting the defense down. We are letting the team down. And watching the tape yesterday, I kind of felt that. I kind of felt that way. You know, like my old offensive mentality came back, and I said, man, those defensive guys are really letting them hang out there a little bit more than they need to be, which is always really frustrating. You know, it's a team sport, and you want to be there for your guys. And I'm sure those offensive guys wanted to be there for those guys. I'm sure Dwayne Haskins wanted to be there to support those guys, but unfortunately, yesterday he didn't have it, and it really showed through.
Logan, I want to get back to Haskins in a second, but I got to ask this question before I forget. You played in this league for so many years, and you've been around the game forever, right? Have you ever seen two straight weeks a coach do what Rivera has done and not kind of go towards the final whistle? I get you're not doing Greg Schiano knocking some center back on kneel downs. Okay, I understand that.
Yeah.
And there's a certain point. But not taking the timeouts, to me, is indefensible. I don't understand that. especially when you're preaching new culture, accountability. We play to the last, well, except for me, and I'll throw in the towel with 55 minutes left. I'm very confused about that. I love Rivera. I don't understand it. I'd love for your comments.
Yeah, so, you know, you asked me if I've seen it before, and I remember being a part of a couple games in 2013 where Mike Shanahan elected to do that with Robert Griffin. And one of the things that I've kind of kicked around in my head, and I don't want to stir the pot, I don't want to create a lot of controversy drawing comparison to Robert, is I wonder about Rivera's faith and Haskins' development at this point. Like, are you putting that athlete and that player in a position to be successful, in a position where he can be, where he can excel in a two-minute drill? And, you know, based on how the offensive line was playing, based on his play up to that point over the last 2 weeks, I would say probably no. And I think a lot of people say, oh, he's throwing the towel. But I would say, like, if you're trying to build for the future, if you're trying to cultivate confidence in a young player, maybe that's the best way to do it. Maybe it's to say, I'm not going to put you in a spot where you're going to throw your fourth pick on the day, a spot where you're going to have another force fumble, or get hit a whole bunch of times and make a whole bunch of errant throws and kind of put all of your weaknesses on full display. I'm going to give you an opportunity to play within the offense when the time's there, and I'm not going to hang you out to dry in this kind of, in this game where we're going to have a tough time winning based on how we've thrown the football the last 2 weeks, if that makes sense.
So, Logan, is that your opinion then, that this has got to be a reflection on Rivera's view of Haskins? Because that's a logical conclusion there, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's something I've been kicking around. Obviously, I don't know Ron. I haven't spoken to Ron. You know, it could be a myriad of other things. Like, obviously, like, you know, the youth of the O-line could be another thing that he's kind of reflecting on, especially going against a guy like Garrett and Richardson on the inside for Cleveland. You know, those guys were being pretty prolific and aggressive as the game was going on. So that also could be an assessment of that group. I mean, it really could just be a total assessment of the offense. You know, maybe I don't have confidence in the wide receivers outside that they're going to be able to support Haskins in this two-minute drill. Maybe I don't feel comfortable with where they're at in terms of understanding the two-minute offense. Like, it could be a myriad of things. I think the first conclusion, just based on how Haskins has played, is that it's Haskins. However, like, it could be a variety of things, I think.
One thing I'm not completely buying, though, is this idea of trying to keep guys healthy. You know, when he talks about look around the league with the injuries, I mean, I understand that you want to do that, but how do you draw the line? You know, there's 3 minutes or 4 minutes left, and now we're going to worry about health over playing football? I mean, the first 56 minutes, guys were risking injury as well. That's just hard for me to juxtapose those two things.
Yeah, so like when he says stuff like that, I think you got to kind of read between the lines. Like, What I see is I see a defense that's been on the field way more than they need to be. They played a physical game thus far. You've got an offense that has been has looked good at times in this game, but I think on the whole has not performed very well, right? So what is the likelihood that we are going to get into a three and out with a significant amount of time left, and the defense is going to have to go back out on the field against a team that kind of is characterized by a physical running style? And you've already lost Chase Young. You've lost Matt Ioannidis. So I think in my mind, in my estimation of what's going on with the game, I think he's more concerned about the defense in that scenario, having to go back out there and kind of work against a 4 minute, which is one of the most physical times in football, especially if it's in a meaningful situation. So to me, that is more what I'm seeing. Again, like, as an offensive player, like the way the offense played yesterday, like, if I was a part of that team, I would be disappointed, and I would feel bad for having left the defense out there for as long as we did. And I think that's more what Ron Rivera is talking about. He's talking about net injuries of the team. I think he's talking specifically about the defense being forced to play another 10 physical snaps going into, and when that is the workhorse, the plow horse of your team, you got to find a way to keep those guys fresh. You got to find a way to keep those guys healthy, or you absolutely have no chance for the rest of the season.
Logan Paulson with us here on Grant and Danny. Logan, just on the good side here on offense, give me a couple guys that stood out to you and why.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I thought on the whole there was a really, you know, like a very optimistic outlook for the offense. I mean, obviously, Dwayne didn't play, I think, his best game, and I think he'd be the first to tell you that. But I think when you look at some of the young guys, right, it was good to see Golden out there getting some plays, making some nice blocks, had a nice reverse early in the game. Seeing some of those fresh legs, that talent, kind of the depth of the receiver group. Everyone's kind of been critical of that group thus far. I thought Inman played an outstanding game. You know, he made some tough catches, had two touchdowns. Obviously, the running backs looked great, but I just think the skill positions in general looked like a kind of like they were meeting my expectations a little bit more. They looked like a legitimate NFL skill group with some depth, with some good route running ability, some contested catches. I think Logan Thomas had made some outstanding catches that, you know, Dwayne was a little off with his throw, had made a diving catch, made a nice fourth down conversion. Those things, I think, just the whole skill group in general, if you're a Washington football team fan, you should feel very encouraged by that. And, you know, the offensive line, they, I thought, played with some real intensity in the run game, getting good push. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's such a disappointing game, because I thought everyone was playing, kind of firing on all cylinders. And was it a perfect game? By no means was it a perfect game. But to turn the ball over four times that lead directly to short fields, like Grant was just saying, to score points, I think that's a disappointing thing, because everybody looks so alive and so full of kind of vigor. And so that's why it's so disappointing, I think. But if you're a fan, those are some things you could be encouraged by.
Logan Paulson, you're going to want to listen to him pre and post throughout the season here on 106.7 The Fan. He's killing it, and we've got the best pre and post show in the market because of his analysis right now. Logan, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you hopping on.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you guys having me.
All right,
thanks,
good
Logan.
Insight. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. We have not yet really gotten into Haskins taking calls or analyzed the performance specifically, so let's do that next. Three interceptions for him yesterday. What went wrong? You're listening to The Fan. With Danny, I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. The double play at 11:45. Your Beltway Blitz at noon. Big thanks to Logan Paulson for joining us. Yesterday, Washington falls to 1-2. They've lost back-to-back games, this time 34-20 at the hands of the Cleveland Browns, despite leading the game 20-17 going into the fourth quarter. The biggest reason for the loss was quarterback play. Three interceptions for Haskins. We can go through the specifics of the three picks, and we will here. But, Danny, what needs to be said, I guess, is this. We're going to, week in and week out, have to parse up supporting cast versus mm-hmm. Haskins. It's not easy for him to shine. It's not easy for him to go out there and put up big numbers. At some point, I'd like him to throw for 265 yards, 270 yards. Everyone else seems to be able to do it, whether you're Nick Mullins or Justin Herbert, finding out 30 seconds before you're about to play that you can pull it off. But I'm not necessarily looking for those types of numbers from him just yet, week in and week out, because of his supporting cast. But yesterday made it pretty clear he was the weakest link. You know, the receivers weren't the problem. The offensive line wasn't the problem. That isn't to say that those guys didn't have bad plays, that there weren't moments where Jaron Christian got beat by Myles Garrett, who had two sacks. But by and large, all those groups were good enough to win, and the quarterback position was not, as three short fields turned into touchdowns and 24 points off of Haskins' four turnovers were the difference in the ballgame.
Yeah, he was bad. And they're, listen, over 16 weeks, this offensive personnel, even with a good quarterback, a great one would change everything, okay? But even with a good quarterback, they wouldn't put up consistent offensive numbers. I think that's true. Now, to yesterday, they had enough. You're not going to be good enough for 16 weeks, but yesterday they would have been. That was a winnable football game, and they did not win it because Dwayne Haskins was bad and turned it over three times. We're not going to remember the fourth down where he slung it kind of sidearm in between a couple different defensive linemen to get it to Logan Thomas in stride. We may remember that he airmailed Terry McLaurin the next play, but then he found Dontrell Inman on an in-breaking route that was a 1,000-mile-an-hour fastball. That was awesome. That's going to get wiped away because of the turnovers and the inaccuracy and some of the other things that happened where he was bad yesterday. I think all of those things can be true. Their personnel's not good enough to be a 11-12-win offense. Yesterday, it was good enough to win that specific football game just because of how the game played out, and Haskins was really bad. These are just data points.
Yes, they are, and I appreciate that you bring up a couple of the good throws, but the good throws yesterday, by and large, are just throws that quarterbacks make in the NFL 5 times a game, 10 times a game, 15 times a game. There was no great moment yesterday that I can remember off the top of my head. I mean, there were a couple of really nice throws. That seam route to Dontrell Inman was a good ball for a touchdown by Dwayne Haskins. You pat him on the helmet when he comes over and you say, hell of a throw, guy. Well, way to go. But you saw that 20 times around the NFL yesterday. There was nothing transcendent or unique or fun about that or different. Here, I guess, is my issue. And we can get into why he struggled in a second. But people said, you know, don't crush him for this. It's a bad game. Well, I guess I have a couple thoughts on that. The first of them is I don't have a problem with bad games for young quarterbacks. Look at Peyton Manning's rookie season interception totals. You know, look at some of the awful duds Kirk Cousins had here in his early days. But what I need is good also. You know, people bring up, and I'm going to use Cousins, okay, not because of this perceived, like, love that I have for him, which has never been correct. I've just correctly said he was a good starter in the NFL, which has been proven correct for five straight years now. But because he's the one quarterback in this organization who's been a franchise passer in the last 10 or so years for any extended period of time. People say, well, Cousins threw four interceptions against the Giants. You're right. He threw a terrible interception against the Titans and got benched for Colt McCoy. You're right. He had a lot of stinkers. His first ever start, he threw for 327 yards on the road in Cleveland. They scored 30 points and they won. He showed something. His one of his earliest games, he threw for 400 yards against Philly on the road at Lincoln Financial Field. It was like a 425-yard game or something crazy. I want some good with the bad. That's all I'm asking for. The bad, the three interceptions yesterday, if that happened and in week one or week two he lit it up, cool. Kyler Murray threw three picks yesterday. He was terrible in stretches. He also had a ridiculous dropped in the bucket corner out touchdown throw in the back of the end zone to Andy Isabella, I think it was. He also had a ridiculous rushing touchdown. He's also got a lot of deposits in the bank. I'm okay with withdrawals if you're putting money in occasionally. We are in the red, people. There are way too many withdrawals and not enough deposits. So the three-interception game where you look like a lost puppy, cool, no problem. You're a young quarterback without great personnel, second year, second offense, three games in, offseason. I am not going to hold that against you and in any way say that this is who you are. If there are some deposits, 10 games in, we've had one deposit basically. It was a week 16 game at home or week 15 game against home at Philly last year, the day after I went and partied and got too drunk with you in D.C.
That's right.
That's the list. That's the time. There was another good half. He got hurt the first play of the second half. I just need good. I'm okay with bad with young quarterbacks. We don't get enough good. That's my concern. That's my fear. And the inaccuracies and the mechanics, are they better right now than they were in week one last year? Honestly, Danny, can you tell me that they are? Because that's not about a lineman. That's not right. About a wide receiver. Accuracy and mechanics, those are him things that he needs to control. Are they better than they were in September last year? Yes or no?
I think yes by a slim margin. Not enough to make you comfortable.
I think you got to strain your eyes to see
we're solved. Yeah, not enough to say we're all good. I mean, there's less, you know, Jay Schrader airmailing. There's less, but it
is
still
there?
Happens. Yes, there's less than it was. You're not remembering how bad it truly was.
I don't know.
Regular bad. He's down at the bottom of the league in ratings. Who are the worst teams in the NFL right now? Right? Who's 0-3? Who are garbage? Minnesota, the Jets, the Giants, Philadelphia. Who are the bottom-rated quarterbacks? There's a correlation right now. It's absolutely happening, and this is part of it. This is part of the evaluation. These are the data points. He's still an F student, but is he an F getting a 20% or is he an F getting 33%? I don't know the answer to that. A smarter person than I am could be able to tell me that and look at some of the things on film and tell me if there's enough growth that this exercise is worthwhile or if we're just spinning our wheels. And right now the fan base thinks we're spinning our wheels. I can tell you that. The very idea that there's a conversation, and overwhelmingly the answer is no, but that there's a conversation about is it time to bench him in a season for a team that's not very good, that's not going anywhere. The answer to that is no, but the fact that the conversation has now begun, that there's even momentum for that much, tells you where the fan base is, right? He is struggling. I'm with you in the sense that the lows are going to be there. Again, for people that have showed promise, Sam Darnold made one of the best plays I've ever seen anybody make yesterday. Dodging 19 different people on the run, threw a dart for a touchdown in a blowout loss because the Jets are terrible. And he's been awful at this point.
Yeah,
but there's still that amazing moment. Yeah, there's still an amazing moment. We don't have enough of those right now to feel good about Dwayne Haskins and say, this project is worthwhile. And I'm with you on that. And
that
I'm frustrated
doesn't worry you?
Of course it does. Of course I'm worried. But I am also saying, What else are we going to do this year? You want to start Alex Smith? You want to start Kyle
Allen? No. That's not what I'm doing.
Yeah, this year I am starting Haskins,
as I've said 16 times. Now, I'll be honest with you. I'm on record as saying there's no chance I start Kyle Allen at any point. I don't think you can start Haskins like seven games in a row if he does what he did yesterday over and over and over again. I don't think it's realistic to even talk about that because I think he's better than what he was yesterday. I mean, that was backup quarterback thrust into duty with no first-team reps bad. I mean, that was like his performance against the Giants when everyone was yelling at Jay Gruden for being mean to him bad. I don't think you're going to see that again. I guess hypothetically, if you saw that a couple of times again, then I would have to reassess my, you have to play him 16 times over and over, just because everything around him was better. But by and large, I don't think he's going to be the weakest link. I think, you know, the team around him and him are going to be kind of comparable offensively.
But yesterday he was. We both agree.
Yes, but here's my point. So I will play him for 16 games. I think people get in their minds, like people are listening right now and they're going, man, he wants to bench him? No. I'm going to keep playing him. One of two things will happen. He'll get better and show that he can do it, or it's going to be very clear that he can't. And by the end of this year, as I've said over and over again ad nauseum, and people were saying they're not going to be enough intel, they're going to have to make a decision at the end of this year what he is. But I'm going to continue to play him. I think you can have two conversations, though. My point is the only thing I talked about, if you go back to the offseason over and over again, and is with all these positive videos that were coming out, and he's working out 14 hours a day, and he's cutting weight, has he improved his accuracy? That's the only thing I want to know. And as of right now, I don't think he has at all. So I am still just as concerned and worried. There were two games at the end of last year where he was throwing darts to receivers on point, and I thought, maybe something clicked here. Maybe we're figuring something out. But we are – I felt if there's like a graph, Danny, that goes up and down, I felt my worst at like, you know, early on last year after that Giants game or whatever. Then I went peaked right after the Eagles and the Giants game in December. I'm way back closer down to the bottom right now because it hasn't been good for 3 weeks now. It hasn't been good, and yesterday was a debacle.
I don't disagree with any of that. I don't. And my takeaway is similar to yours. I am not going to anybody else unless there's injury. That's my philosophy on this thing. Because the most important thing is to know. I think this coaching staff, by the way, knows. I think they've got their opinion set. And they can be proven wrong if he improves and plays very well. But I've got a theory that they know exactly what's going on and what the deal is. And they're more than willing to, in a year where they're not going to be particularly good, to trot Haskins out and give as large a sample as possible to decide if it's him or if it's somebody that's in college at this point.
Hold on, because I want to drill down on that next. Say that again. You've got a theory what? That they are?
This coaching staff, I think, knows about Dwayne Haskins. I'm going off what Logan said, watching these end of games.
Knows
deals
what
with
about
Rivera.
Dwayne Haskins? That he's not.
Their evaluation is Haskins is not great and maybe isn't the guy. They're going to get a big sample to either prove themselves wrong or to prove themselves right.
All right, we'll get into that next. You guys can call in 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Ron Rivera, after yesterday's game, asked about Dwayne Haskins' future, saying he's sticking with his quarterback, and he should. It's been three games with no preseason in a new offense. He should get to start in week four. This is a rebuilding team. He was drafted 15th overall last year. But we'll get into what Logan Paulson told us just a few minutes ago on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline about the performance from Haskins and the fact that he thinks there's a chance, Danny, that, you know, maybe these decisions late in games where Rivera's not calling timeouts actually comes back to the fact that he doesn't have enough faith in his quarterback right now and in the offense in turn. But you've got a theory, I guess, that you're floating that you think that the coaches already have their minds made up.
And, well, minds made up is it makes it sound like there's no room for more information. I don't necessarily believe that. I guess here's what I'm thinking, and here's kind of the evidence that leads me to this conclusion. The end game situations each of the last 2 weeks, okay, indicate a coach that doesn't believe in his offense and by transitivity, the quarterback, right? You're risking injury, and Logan's point was it maybe on offense, but it's really to put your defense out there that's been, you know, on the field for 35 minutes and the running games and everything else that have taken place. So you don't believe in them, so you just kind of wave the white flag. That's number one. Number two, look at the context and circumstances. we know last year that Dan Snyder is the guy who spearheaded this draft pick of this quarterback. We saw the conflict therein, where a head coach was fighting for his job, wanted nothing to do with a rookie developmental quarterback. The entire saga ensues. I'm looking now at Ron Rivera getting all the keys, right? Everybody gets one. Every coach can go to the owner and say, this guy that you're telling me is the guy is not the guy. And he's allowed to do that until it goes bad, and then the owner takes control and either, you know, you sink or swim. We saw that with Shanahan. We saw that with Jay Gruden. So kind of right now, Ron Rivera's in the honeymoon period. He could do whatever he wants. And he knows there wasn't a good option available this offseason. He knows they've got a rookie, a guy that was the owner's dude who was drafted last year to a completely different regime. There's no urgency. There's no hurry. And he's telling us over and over and over again at the podium, there's no hurry. There's no urgency. We're building. This is a young football team. He's talking about development. So to me, this is I'm going to show the owner's box that this guy either can or can't do it. And my evaluation, I think, honestly, is that he can't. I'm just looking at Rivera read between the lines. So that now next year we'll be in the marketplace. So to me, it still goes part and parcel to what I've been talking about, what you've been talking about. It's give us the biggest sample possible to either convince us, convince ownership, fan base, whomever, that Haskins is the guy to build around or he's the guy to move on from.
What we don't know is what Rivera thinks of Haskins behind closed doors. I mean, look, we know that Jay Gruden, I don't think it was that he didn't want a rookie quarterback, but he didn't want that rookie quarterback.
One.
And he made that clear with all of his actions. And those of us who talked to him and had any personal interactions with him knew what he thought. He made it pretty clear to me at different times what he thought about Dwayne Haskins. From what I was always told, Kyle Smith was adamant about not drafting Dwayne Haskins in the first round. He's still here. In fact, he's more influential and powerful here than he once was. So maybe that speaks to how the front office feels about him. But this is Ron Rivera's show, and Rivera's show only, really. So his opinion, Scott Turner's opinion, they matter more, and we don't know what they think. They may think he's the next Cam Newton, and they're going to give him all the time he needs to get to that point. This was Ron Rivera yesterday when he was asked about Haskins and starting in the future.
Well, the biggest thing is that I just got done talking to Dwight and told him. I said, look, I told you I'm behind you, and I'm gonna stick with you, so you go out and play football. But, you know, he's just got to learn and understand, you know, you don't have to make the big play all the time. Plus, you've got guys that can make plays, so all you need to do is get the ball into their hands and let them go out and make plays.
The first interception, he was trying to throw a ball that he shouldn't have, Danny. Logan Thomas is covered down the field. Maybe he decided before the snap that's where he wanted to go. It was inaccurate and too tall, and so he threw it right into the waiting arms of a safety playing center field. But it's just not there anyway. Like a perfect throw is probably not completed there. There isn't a lane. There's nothing happening. That was his first interception of the season. Could have well been his second of the game. There are other pickable passes that didn't get picked off. But that first interception, and we saw that mistake from time to time. Young players make that mistake a lot. Honestly, that happened, and other than saying, oh, that's done a great throw, that was kind of my reaction. I didn't think much of it because you see a lot of young guys try to throw that ball. He misses high often, and when that happens in the middle of the field, it's going to get picked off. That's happened a million times to a lot of guys.
Yeah, I mean, Brady had one of those, I believe, either week one or a couple weeks ago. Everybody does that one. There was a tight window there, and it's the NFL. You've got to hit it. That's just a bad throw. I don't know if the read was terrible and everything, but, yeah, that one sailed on him, looked like just the easiest pick for a guy sitting there in center field who had a pretty good feel for it. But if the throw's directly on target right there, how many times you see Jason Witten catch that pass from Tony Romo against Washington, right? That very route, that very coverage, that very thing. He missed that throw. That was a bad one, and I think there's no
the first throw you're
getting around
about?
That. Yeah, the first interception.
See, we'll disagree on that. I don't think there was a throw to be made there. I think the coverage you were getting, basically trying to drop a ball in a bucket between a safety and a corner, I didn't think Logan Thomas was open enough to even make the throw. Second and 25, you're trying to get 7, 8, 9 yards there, make it third and a little bit more manageable. I'm just taking something underneath, and maybe he'll learn to do that. The second interception came on a 3rd and 7, and that was the one where he had Dontrell Inman running kind of a curl route. So you'll remember this. You're at your own 19-yard line. 2-minute warning of the first half. Washington at that point is trying to get into halftime down 10-7. And you can either go get a field goal and tie the game, or worst-case scenario, it's 3rd and 7 there. If you got nothing, either take that sack or throw that ball away You're punting, and they got to drive the length of the field to try to get three going into halftime. At worst, and still unlikely, but at worst, you're down 13-7. He throws a pick. Again, not open. Two defenders in the area. Ralph gets jumped on that 3rd-and-7. Would have been an 8-yard completion if he can fit it in. But I thought that was another case of just trying to do too much. And that throw was probably even worse than the first one in terms of whether or not a guy was open.
That one, I don't get. I don't know what I don't know about that one. I thought was among his worst plays of his whole career. That was really, really bad, I felt like. That was a stare the guy down. It became very clear. Everyone knows where you're going on a curl route that wasn't there. Nothing about it was open at any point in time. I don't know what indicators you have to say, this is the throw. It looked like he was trying to throw the ball to the Browns player. I believe it was Smith who came up with that pick. I don't get that one at all.
And then the third pick, with about 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, put the game on ice. Again, it was Inman. Again, it was a curl route. This one was interesting because it was the first of the throws, I thought, where if you throw it to a different spot, you might be able to actually complete the pass. But rather than throwing it to the inside of Inman with the defender kind of behind him to his right, he throws it essentially right at the defender, several feet away from Dontrell Inman. I think it was the worst of the three throws. It was probably the one of the three that, if made correctly, could have been a completion, maybe the least ill-advised of them, but it was the worst execution on the actual toss.
Yeah, no disagreement there. I don't know if he thought Inman was going a different direction or if Inman messed up or whatever. I just know that wasn't close. That one was not close. That was a gift. He may as well have had Amazon Prime click that little box and said, is this the gift for Mr. Goodson? It is. Send it right to him.
This is Logan Paulson. We talked to him about Dwayne Haskins earlier this hour.
You know, I'm going to preface this by saying that playing quarterback is a really tough position. But that being said, it's also arguably the most important position in sports. And when that guy doesn't play well, it makes it hard for football teams to be successful. And everyone's entitled to an off day. And I think his off day was pretty off. But, you know, nobody's perfect. And I would say that one of the reasons it's so frustrating, his level of play, was that I thought the rest of the team played pretty well. The defense played pretty good. The rest of the skill guys played pretty good. I thought Scott Turner called a nice game. The offense looked a little bit more upbeat. It looked a little bit more dynamic, and all of those things are really positive. And I really felt like the defense came out and kind of put their foot down on those first couple drives and said, you're not going to be able to run the football against us. But unfortunately, those turnovers, they led to kind of some attrition along that defensive front. And, you know, I think so long answer short, yeah, I think some of that criticism is warranted of him today because I thought the team played well enough to win the game, if that makes sense.
That was Logan Paulson when he joined us earlier. You can grab that entire interview via radio.com. Rewind. 800-636-1067 is the number to join us on Grant and Danny. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Great day of football yesterday. Obviously, in the 1 o'clock window, we were glued to Washington and Cleveland. Had an extra 4 o'clock game in the slate yesterday, though, Danny. So they normally have 3 4 o'clock kickoffs, and yesterday there were 4. I think the NFL should do that. In fact, I think they should stagger more start times over the course of the day. You know, whether it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, kind of all day long, 3 games at a time or something like that. I think it would make sense from a TV rating standpoint because so many people now don't just watch one game and watch Red Zone. But if they're going to do it the way they do it with 2 windows, 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock hours, I'd love to see at minimum 4 per week, maybe even 5 4 o'clock games, just so there's not so much going on at 1 if you're watching your local team that you're missing so much.
Yeah, I liked that. Because sometimes if you've only got – sometimes there's 2 or, you know, very rarely, but for the most part, 3. If you get a stinker on the main game on Fox or whatever, right, or the main game on CBS, you're sort of stuck with it if that's the game of interest to you, right? And that's kind of annoying, especially if it's not your squad. So I'm with you. An extra game in that kind of window I think is good. I've always wondered why they don't balance it a little bit more. I'm not saying, you know, 8 games at each time slot or whatever the math would work out to be when you include Sunday night, Monday night, et cetera, but – that primetime 4:25 kickoff, that late window, supplement it with a couple other games just in case. I'm with you, dude. I liked it.
Craziest game of the day. There's a couple of candidates. Probably was the Bills and the Rams. Buffalo beat L.A. 35-32. They were up massive. Rams came back, take a lead. Buffalo wins the game in the final minute, Josh Allen throwing a touchdown pass. But I think they got bailed out by a terrible call. And
yeah,
if I'm Sean McVay and the Rams, I would be furious. That OPI call, or excuse me, the DPI call, if anything, it may have been, it should have been nothing, maybe even OPI. But basically, Stephon Diggs just runs into a defensive back, a collision, and they call pass interference, and they give him a new set of downs, and on the next play, they score. I would be so upset if I was Sean McVay today.
Yeah, well, there are a couple wild games this weekend. Green Bay, New Orleans was really fun, 37-30 back and forth. Seattle, Dallas, 38-31. Nobody's defending anybody. And Detroit and Arizona was a really good football game going back and forth, 26-23 final. The Lions, of course, as everyone predicted, would go on the road and beat Arizona, who'd look pretty good through a couple weeks. And how about Tennessee, 31-30 against Minnesota? That was a thriller as well against one team that's good, the other now 0-3 licking its wounds. But overall, a pretty good weekend of football, I would say.
Oh, so entertaining. That product just, it seems to never fall off. Every weekend, man, inject that product right into the veins. It is time.
I got Bears-Falcons, too, sorry.
You mean the Falcons for the second straight week losing a 15-point lead in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, that's the one.
First team to ever do that?
That's the one.
Dan Quinn. Oh, my goodness, that poor bastard.
All right,
let's get
up, bud?
To our double play. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports.
GP, the first game of the year for the Wolfpack is in the books. I promised an update. I promised a scouting report. Tough game for the lads and gals, I guess, for that matter. We are a co-ed soccer team. And, wow. So, we get to Montgomery County. We have our game Saturday morning at 11:30. And the league is kind enough to allow the D.C. kids to come out and do it. We really appreciate them having us. I was told it was going to be 5-on-5. I find out on Thursday it's not. It's 4-on-4. So I've got 10 players. I'm going to have to sub all the time. It's really, really hard. Well, guess what? It is 4-on-4. But we got two fields of 4-on-4 going at once. So instead of only, 6, 7, 8, 10 minutes of on-field soccer time for the kids, they're running their asses ragged. I had no idea. I found that once we got there. We split the team into two squads.
Sounds like the coach was not very plugged in and prepared, Danny.
Man, this was so makeshift. So what we found out, like kind of as this was going, the Montgomery County Soccer group, they have already been playing for a month. They started on time. It looked like Stoddard Soccer, DC Soccer, the rec leagues and stuff for the little kids, was not going to have a season because of DC's really consistent and excellent rules where you can gather in the thousands to march and protest and go to bars, but you can't have soccer where everyone's masked up. I mean, all the rules make perfect sense and everything's good. Anyway, and at least we're in school. So we can't play in DC. Well, Montgomery County's like, if you guys got a couple teams and some younger age groups, you guys are welcome to join us. So we're joining their season already in progress. So I don't know any of the rules. Nobody knows kind of what to expect, what the deal is. All the rules are very strict, and they're well thought out. Parents are separate. Everyone's got their own cone where all your stuff is, and it was really, really good. So that part of it was excellent and seamless and wonderful and very safe, and everyone was very happy with it. On field. Oh, coach is under fire after 1 week. The squad is not where we would like it to be. When you lose your three best players to opt-outs, COVID-related, you're going to struggle a little bit on the field. The replacements, we've got some nice pieces. These young men would probably be the number four seed in terms of overall quality of player if we had our full complement. So they're going to help us in the future, but it's not enough to make up for the loss of our three stars of the Wolfpack. But everybody fought. Everyone played hard, but we came in second place on both fields.
I hope you sugarcoat that a little bit in the post-game press conference.
Oh, they don't know this stuff. They're in school right now.
I don't mean the kids themselves. I just mean when you're asked in the press conference, why you guys are struggling, I hope you don't blame COVID opt-outs. I hope you just wear it and say, it starts with me. We got to get better. This is about me. I'm not putting them in the right position to succeed.
Coach had to answer a lot of tough questions, and there's an email chain that he's not on, and it's awkward.
Did you take your timeouts with you? You got all three timeouts left?
That's right. I holstered them. We punted on with 5 minutes to go.
Don't ask me about timeouts. That's not a fair question. I take the timeouts with me. We're developing these kids. What's next?
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.